happy Friday to you all, and welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio. I am your humble servant host tonight. My name is Jake Anderson. And Friday is a kind of a special day around the world. Suddenly, large chains and shackles are unlocked from our ankles and wrists, and all of a sudden we remember what it's like to be free again. And here too at the Anti-Media, we like on Friday, it's a special day, we like to kind of untuck our shirts a little, maybe undo our collar and sleeves, have a little bit of a fireside chat, chew the fat, let it all hang out. Because, you know, it's getting dirty out there, people. I'll be honest with you. I think you all know what I'm talking about. Facebook has turned into a clown's autopsy. I have a panic attack the second I go on Facebook. I'm on there now. I'm having a panic attack now. And you can't tell because of my smooth, mellifluous voice, but I am indeed having a panic attack right now. But, you know, I get used to that. What I don't get used to is the vitriol. The vitriol, my God, on Facebook right now. People are so up in arms about everything. You could say that you're adopting a puppy and someone would disagree with you and troll you over it right now on Facebook. But, and so, you know, on Friday, we like to kind of, I don't know, take our pants off a little bit and let out some of that Thanksgiving feast, go back into famine mode for a little bit, and then get ready for Christmas, the holiday season, whatever holiday you celebrate. This is going to be a big one, because there are going to be more family fights than in history, maybe since, maybe, I don't know, Nixon, maybe after Bush. I don't know, man. I think this year we got it. And I think people are going to be clawing each other's eyeballs out of their skulls on Christmas this year. And, you know, Godspeed. Godspeed, you Black Emperor, because this is the harvest we have reaped. And now we're going to have to eat the harvest. So today was an unusual day because three articles of mine went on the site back to back to back. These are articles I worked on over the course of like 3 days, and yet somehow they all went live on the site almost simultaneously. I don't know what the hell was going on, but I'm thankful for it. And this is all on theantimedia.org. And the first one is one that we're going to spend a lot of time here on, and it's fairly controversial. I've already been verbally and psychologically abused multiple times about it today. And the title is, Here's How Trump Could Still Actually Lose the Presidential Election. That's right. You heard that correctly. How Trump could lose the presidential election. So the faithless electors would be the class of people that would change the election by, basically, if the faithless electors vote against Trump, Trump doesn't get elected. What? So I'm going to try and bring in our co-host here, DB Schwartz. And let's see if I can get him on the line here. So the fearless electors, they are a funny bunch of people. DB, do I have you on the air? You there, DB?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. All
Okay.
right. So what I was talking about was the faithless electors, and it's never happened before. We've never had an election that has been stolen after the election. And that's what could happen, basically, is if there was a coup and enough faithless electors decided that they did not want to vote for Trump, they don't have to vote for Trump. That is constitutional. Am I right? DB.
I guess at the fringes of the loopholes that exist, they can probably make something like that happen. The question is, do they want to go against the Trump voting block that are highly emotional and overly armed,
Who
and like,
cares? I mean, what are they going to do? Commit murder? If the electors, it's never happened before. That doesn't mean it can't happen.
Then naturally, because we've never seen it happen, we don't know how people would react. So
Right.
I don't know, man.
But
I couldn't.
we've had elections stolen before.
Right, but if they did it over, like those were covert means. Those are ways they could explain those things away, not out in the open. Say, you know what? We actually are going to scrap this whole system, and we're going to go with the popular vote. We're going to, you know, it's going to
Yeah, I'm
force
not
you to look.
saying it wouldn't be dirty. I'm not saying it wouldn't be insane. Basically, what I would argue is that here's how I realistically think it would go down. And I didn't put this in the article because people would hunt me down and chop my legs off. But basically, what I think could happen is if there was a terrorist attack in Washington and it attacked, let's say, some of the central nodes in Washington, and it killed some high-ranking people, including some of the people we're talking about. I think it could go down. And I know that you're as conspiratorial as I, DB, and you know that the establishment did not want Trump.
No, I mean, absolutely not. And, you know, for better or worse, we'll see what happens after the inauguration. It's going to be an interesting time going up to that. We're,
Yeah.
what, 41, 42 days out now, and we're starting to see a lot of desperation tactics start coming out. I mean, where did they get CGI Clinton to come out of the woodworks yesterday about fake news? I mean,
Yeah.
she looks absolutely like a mortician's keeping her held together. So
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I can see them getting so desperate. I mean, they've worked so hard so long to have people swallow the globalism lie, hook, line, and sinker. And now that there's enough people, just enough people that were awake just in the nick of time, it really complicates things. I'm not sure what's going to happen, but I know they're desperate.
Well, yeah, and we can talk about this all night, and we're going to return to this. But I want to touch on the Standing Rock issue because we actually have online with us a journalist who just got back from Standing Rock, and Claire Burnish. She is a force of nature, and no one is fighting harder. No one is fighting harder on the ground against the forces of opposition than Claire Burnish. Claire, are you on the line?
I am here. I don't know about
Excellent.
that either. I don't think that's a very accurate assessment, but thank you
Oh, come
nonetheless.
on. Don't be so humble. It's the holiday season, but you don't need to have that much humble pie. So I hear that you just got back. It was cold. You were there after they were spraying water cannons in freezing temperatures, but how are you feeling?
I actually have the same sickness that just about everybody up there has. It's kind of become almost a joke, like the Standing Rock sickness. Everybody up there has respiratory problems and like bronchitis or, you know, who knows what. I wasn't sick at all when I was there, and one day out and suddenly I'm like flat on the ground.
I'm sorry to hear that. I am. And, but you know, you went there and you did your thing, and I have to tell you, I'm very curious because I feel like I was there in solidarity, but let's be honest, that's bullshit. I wasn't there. And I would love to know, first of all, what was it like when you got there? Can you describe a little bit kind of what the scenario was when you pulled up? Because I imagine you pulling up to a white sheet of frozen snow and punching through it and then walking to some alternate universe that I don't know about. Was it like that?
Actually, it really was. I've been reporting on trying to report accurately on Standing Rock for a month and month and month. And I nothing that I reported was untrue, it turns out. But being up there is a completely different experience than anything that we can glean from reading articles, particularly of mainstream media, and, you know, listening to reports from the ground. It's a completely different world. First of all, you know, I would love to paint the same rosy picture that I have been for a long time, but I just can't do that. It's not a rosy picture. There's infighting all over the place, like amongst the tribes, amongst the water protectors, between, you know, the people who are opposing the pipeline and the people who are pro-pipeline. People are told, people who are up there joining the movement are told to literally stay out of Bismarck. It's gotten so bad. They have several different groups of people going around and essentially terrorizing water protectors who venture into Bismarck for supplies or anything. There's been tires, journalists have had tires slashed, windows broken, threats made to native and non-native peoples by individuals who are masked. And
who are these? Do we know who these individuals? Obviously, they're well, actually, no, it's not obvious. Who are they? Who's doing this?
Well, there have been reports that they might be actual police officers, but that has not been 100% proven true. The thing is, there's even now, and this is unconfirmed, so I don't want to venture too far off the.
Yeah, no. Don't say anything. But, it's going to get you in trouble.
No, it won't. But there are groups now forming to actively try to get water protectors out of Bismarck.
And for our listeners, real quick, can you just describe what the water protectors are? Because some people, I'm not sure, are know.
Well, yes. In mainstream media, it's been called a protest movement, like a protest against the pipeline. But the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe and Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe have named themselves water protectors because the idea is that they need to protect the water from contamination by big oil. At issue in Standing Rock is the Dakota Access Pipeline and being constructed by Energy Transfer Partners, slated to go underneath, to be rooted underneath the Missouri River, the Missouri River's Lake Oahe Reservoir, which is the sole drinking water source for the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe. Now, there are so many layers and complexities to all of this I can't possibly get into in 1 hour, but essentially, in a lot of Native American culture, women are protectors of the water. So they have led this movement, and they have deemed themselves water protectors, not protesters. They're not protesting anything. They are opposing the sullying of water by big oil. So that's an important distinction that mainstream media just can't seem to get gleaned out of this for some reason. Now, there are, when I went up there, which was on the third or fourth, there were over 10,000 people at camp. Yeah. There were thousands of vets that had deployed there to defend the water protectors from the militarized police who have repeatedly, initiated excessive force. Like what you were discussing beginning on November 20th and lasting through the 21st, militarized police assaulted around 400 water protectors for over 8 hours. At the bridge, it's on Highway 1806, it's called the Backwater Bridge. There is a roadblock in place that police have put there. And it's the main access point for the tribe to have emergency services come and leave the camps and the reservation. Now they have to route emergency services from Bismarck and from anywhere else. It takes an extra 45 minutes to an hour for them to get around. So we're talking a matter of life and death. A few people tried to move that blockade out of the way, and that was when the police came in and began assaulting everybody with rubber bullets, mace, pepper spray, grenades, like tear gas grenades, concussion grenades, and then ultimately also water cannons in temperatures that were hovering around, you know, in the low 20s. And having been there and standing near that bridge, like right at the bridge, I can tell you the wind is something you cannot describe, how strong it is and how cold it actually is up there. That was beyond an act of aggression for them, for the police led by the Morton County Sheriff's Department to use water on people. The police have claimed repeatedly that they want to clear the camps for the safety of these water protectors, when evidence shows directly the opposite, that all they want to do is defend the pipeline and use violence against these people who have remained largely peaceful and prayerful. It's a very unstable situation.
Yeah.
Now, go ahead.
Well, yeah, and I was going to say previously I said that those with those temperatures, that kind of water, I mean, you're talking about, you're not submerged in it like people who fell from the Titanic, but that's the kind of temperatures we're talking about in terms of the water.
It was pretty close. It was pretty close.
Yeah, that's straight abuse. It's assault. And so that was unacceptable. And then, of course, right after that, shortly before you arrived, they announced that they were going to pull back on the pipeline. Were you there when that announcement came in?
There were two announcements. Okay, one is that, well, okay, there have been a number, and people kind of have grown weary of basically the same announcement with different words. And the Army Corps of Engineers made what many saw as the ultimate announcement in saying that they would deny the easement necessary that had to be granted for Energy Transfer Partners to drill under the Missouri River. Now, they denied it and stated waiting for an actual environmental impact study, which is a deeper and much more conclusive study on the impact on the water and everything else than what they had to do previously. They never said anything that it had to be rerouted or anything else. And what people are misunderstanding, that was, you know, kind of a symbolic win, but that's about it. People are misunderstanding greatly how much Energy Transfer Partners wants to complete this pipeline. And within hours, the ETP came out with a statement saying, screw that, we're going to drill anyway. We're going to pay. The reports were at the scene that they were going to go ahead and just pay the fines, which were allegedly, say, $50,000 a day, to go ahead and complete drilling. There are also rumors going around the camps that they have been drilling under the river the whole time and are very nearly complete with this project. What they might be doing, which makes sense, is waiting for Trump to actually take office.
Right.
Trump has said that he would approve any pipelines that came his way. And now today there was a court ruling that kind of it more or less delays a final ruling on the pipeline until February. So that just happened.
So, yeah, okay, that's an interesting thought. I mean, it is certainly within Trump's DNA to approve anything pro-corporate. Except he talks a big game on TPP. We'll see how that goes down. But with regard to the pipeline, he has been ebullient about discussing that he would push that through. So when he comes into office, this whole thing could flare right back up again if it ever died down to begin with. So when you left like a day ago, 2 days ago?
I left on Thursday, I believe.
Okay. And are there still around 10,000 people there? I'm stunned at
No.
that number. Okay.
No, there aren't 10,000 people anymore. There were two more orders that were issued, actually. The Army Corps of Engineers earlier issued an eviction notice for the main camp north of the Cannibal River, which is Ochete Sekoe. And the main camp was, the largest. And that order went into effect on December 5th. We're talking about treaty lands that were never ceded by the Sioux, so there are a number of layers to this as well. But essentially, emergency services will no longer respond to any emergencies in the camp. The police will not respond. No, nobody will respond to any emergencies that happen within the camp. The camps are officially closed, the ones north of the Cannibal River. And so that was fine, and people had vowed to stay the winter anyway and ignore that order.
Right.
And
If
many have, many
the
have.
pipeline people are going to ignore their orders and drill anyway, then the people staying
Right.
there can do the
But
same.
the thing is that the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe Chairman Dave Archambault, the second, issued a statement basically declaring that Army Corps statement a win, the denial of the easement a win, and told all non-Sioux people and basically everybody to go home. So there's an enormous controversy up there right now about who's leaving and who's staying.
Right.
Many people have entrenched themselves, and they have a very, there are some unsafe structures. Those people are either being, kind of evacuated or moved into safer structures. But we're talking about a city, essentially.
Right.
I'd seen the pictures from a number of friends and everything. Going up there, it really is like a city. These people
Well,
are prepared for the
on
winter.
that note, the reason I'm so stunned is because to me, the pictures I've seen, and this is where I think mainstream media has, I mean, I hate to always be coming back to their failure, but the pictures I've seen represented on the major websites make it look like it's like 50 people standing around hanging out. And it's clearly, it's a city. 10,000 people is a freaking city.
There's infrastructure. I mean, they have composting toilets and porta potties and trash
I've
collection,
seen
and they
one
have like
picture of that stuff.
I know, and mainstream media has done a terrible job. In fact, I was up there, I was up there staying with Miko Hayes from the Daily Hayes, and we went up to see the veterans and a number of tribes march to the bridge and kind of give a statement to the police one day. And CNN pulled up in their big, huge van, and it was really funny because we're looking at them like, where the hell have you been? And we asked them, like, oh, you finally decided to show up. And the guy driving the truck was like, well, haven't you been paying attention? We've been here for a week. It's like, yeah, this has been going on since April. I
Yeah,
mean, they have no, mainstream media has no clue. They are not reporting this accurately by any stretch of the imagination ever.
well,
They just aren't getting the whole story.
it's when it became profitable, when people started paying attention, the same way that Trump brings in bucks for the network, when people actually started talking about it, the network was like, oh, okay, I guess we better cover this.
Right. But, as soon as the blizzard hit, mainstream media also disappeared. That day, when the blizzard hit, it was insane up there.
Oh, yeah.
I lived in Buffalo, New York, and I've been through blizzards. I've never seen anything like this in my life. They were holding people in the camp because, in order to get out of the camp, there's a big hill that with some twists and turns, and people were getting stuck. So, they held people in the camp. I mean, the conditions are bad. I think that they are right to an extent. People were not necessarily prepared for North Dakota winters. However, there's a lot of cooperation in the camps. They have tried to, help people out to an extent who were unprepared and make sure that everything is okay. Nobody wants anybody to die or to suffer or anything like that. It's just that mainstream media makes it sound like this is an unsafe tent city, and it's nothing of the sort. We're talking about army barracks and teepees and yurts and shelters that were meant to withstand this weather.
Right,
So.
and cities are inherently unsafe. That's and if there's no such thing as a safe city. So, but
One interesting thing I've noted on a Freakonomics scale is, as a result of this, Energy Transfer Partners stock is is dumping so hard that Seneca is about to basically acquire them because they're so cheap now. So, I mean, you can look at this from that point of view and say, what in the hell is going on like the world economic stage?
Yeah, there's a merger in process. Sunoco Logistics is acquiring Energy Transfer Partners, and I think that it's being done for a number of reasons. From the start, it's important to understand that the oil and gas industry felt that the Dakota Access Pipeline, otherwise known as the Bakken Pipeline, was completely unnecessary. Yes, it transfers crude to a hub in Illinois, and the crude from the Bakken formation is very valuable right now, but there was no real need for this pipeline in the first place. But the real problem with this is we are going to be fighting this fight very extensively across the country, and we already are. ETP and other companies have already begun construction on a number of other pipelines using eminent domain to essentially usurp people's property and make sure that they get their way, because there was so much political and financial wrangling behind the scenes for 2 years in order to make the Dakota Access Pipeline a reality. And the main point, the feature that people are missing but is the most essential to understand this whole controversy, is that export of unrefined crude is now a legal thing. There had been a ban in place since the early 1970s. And in order to get Dakota Access approved, and basically the way that ETP wanted it to happen, they stuck a small piece of legislation in the omnibus spending bill that removed that ban from the 1970s. That's a huge deal, because that means that these pipeline companies now see only dollar signs from exporting crude to foreign nations, where that was not a possibility at all before. I mean, we could export refined crude and various other types, but this is a new development that's enormous, and it's very, very essential to understand. There's a last-ditch effort that's going to take place to try to make sure that ban is put back in place. But other than that, we are at the mercy now of these companies. And if your private property happens to sit in the way of this pipeline, they're going to make sure they can take it and put their pipeline right through.
Right. Yeah, it's a sad scenario. I mean, this is kind of ground zero of the global corporatocracy takeover. I mean, this is...
Where does it go from Illinois? That's the real question.
From Illinois, it goes to a hub in Texas in the Gulf of Mexico to be exported. A number of other projects also do the same thing. There are ones taking place I can't remember right now, but there are so many other states. That hub in Illinois is really important because it's a fast track to the coast to get the oil out of here and to the places that want to buy it. And ETP, when they had proposed the pipeline, they touted before the legislation was before the ban was revoked. They touted this idea that the crude pumped from the Bakken formation was going to help America be energy independent, and this will create so many jobs. And, you know, they had all this whole propaganda campaign in effect. Those jobs are mostly temporary. And then they kind of backtracked a little bit later on and said, well, we're just kind of like FedEx, making sure that the oil gets to where it needs to go, which essentially means, if you look at the paperwork, it's going to all be exported. None of this has anything to do with energy independence in the U.S. at all. None of it. This is purely about profit. So if you take a step back and you look at what the Morton County Sheriff's Department led coalition of police, which is 9 states and some 76, 78 departments, they're inflicting like unparalleled barbarous violence against people who have remained unarmed and essentially peaceful, except for minor acts of civil disobedience. They have taken the stance that what they're doing is right because the protesters have been violent. There have been agitators and infiltrators exposed, and that's it. This is not the water protectors. They are peaceful people. All of this violence and all of this controversy has to do with the defense of an industry that's going to profit from the foreign sale of oil. It has nothing to do with energy infrastructure. It has nothing to do with energy independence. It has nothing to do with anything but profit for this company. And that is where everybody's getting it wrong. It's like, go ahead and let the pipeline happen. You know, people are like, this is going to help people have jobs. It's only going to help jobs while construction is underway. And it's like, you know, 90% done, if not more. And that's it. Once it's done, those jobs evaporate. And the profit goes straight to the people at the top and does nothing for anyone else involved. It's a really sad situation. There's a lot more that I cannot yet get into that makes it even sadder.
Oh, boy.
But this was going to happen from the start.
It can get more sad?
Oh, it really can. Trust me.
Oh, God.
The pain spread to every single police and sheriff's department that had to be involved, because we had like Hennepin County here that went, and then when they got home, they got absolutely hammered by like a citizens task force, and now they want to cut like OT for the department just because it was such a waste of money. And like, these guys are demoralized now because they had to go do like inhumane things, and were ordered to go do it, and it's just BS all ways around it, really.
Yeah, one sheriff was removed. One North Dakota sheriff was removed from office. McKenzie County, I believe. The McKenzie County sheriff was removed from office over questions that he had actually thoroughly militarized his police force to use violence against the water protectors. Others, like, I can't remember the department off the top of my head, but there was another department from pretty far away in the West. His team was traveling to help Martin County, and then they just turned around and went back. They decided they couldn't do it. You know, you have the biggest bank in Norway has pulled its assets from the project under pressure and might pull more. It's possible they're doing it under a different name or more covertly, but at the same time, the movement against what's going on is actually working. But now it's a matter of beating the clock, because once Trump takes office in January, it's as much as a signed deal, and that's it. And we'll have a number of these battles in the future, and it's going to repeat itself, you know, hundreds of times.
And what do you foresee happening with the movement there? Do you think that they're, I mean, mobile is, by mobile, I mean, do you think that they're going to, is this transferable, or are they going to, you know, up and go to the next battle and just keep the battle going? I mean, the same way that Occupy, we want to see Occupy, we want to see Black Lives Matter, we want to see these, the Bernie Sanders movement, whatever you think of his politics, we want to see these movements multiply and flourish. And do you think that has the possibility of happening here?
I think there's a distinct chance that it will. This has become a movement against big oil. We are talking about a resource that is completely replaceable by other technology, completely. You know, there are some it's known as DAPL, D-A-P-L. So there are some pro-DAPL people who say, well, what do you know, all of you use petroleum products every day. And that's really true. Most of us do use petroleum products all the time, every day, plastics, et cetera. But the thing is, those can be replaced by hemp. They can be replaced by a number of other products. Even fuel for your car can be replaced by other things. This has become... It's very much centered around the Standing Rock Sioux tribe's struggle against having their water supply tainted. But it's a universal battle against water, against contamination of water. There are 18 million people living downstream from the point where the DAPL should cross underneath the Missouri River. If a major spill happened and it couldn't be contained, we're talking directly about 18 million people's water supply, but it's also a watershed. There are ecosystems. It's the fourth largest watershed system in the entire planet. That would be a real freaking mess. And this is happening everywhere. I mean, just 200 miles away from where these camps are, there was a spill of unknown proportions into a waterway just this week. Wow. Yes, I think this will be a movement that's much bigger. It already has become that. People are talking about going and protesting the other ETP pipelines that are in the works or already under construction. There's Rover is a big project, the Rover pipeline, and there are others. It's necessary, it's vital, and hopefully the good parts and not the bad parts will be transferred into other movements until we can get the fact that they lifted the export ban until we can get that repealed.
This is turning into the science fiction novel Dune more and more every day, where you have water as a scarcity and spice as the commodity running the space trade and everything being beholden to that. I want to return quickly to the sickness that you said was going around, and I'm confused by that. I'm wondering if you can shed a little bit of light on exactly what you mean by why is everyone getting sick all of a sudden there?
Well, I mean the obvious answer is that the conditions are frigid. The temperatures are barely they're barely at zero, and that's without the wind chill. The other day there was a wind chill advisory. The wind was gusting up to like 45 miles an hour, which wind chill is how the temperature directly affects your skin. They were saying that if you had any exposed skin and you were in the elements for over half an hour, you would get frostbite, period. It's really bad. So besides the obvious weather elements, there has been some talk around the camps that there has been spraying of chemicals. Now, none of this, of course, I know it sounds tinfoil hatty too, which is not my cup of tea, but there was an actual video that has been seen by multiple people that kind of proved that to be the case. Morton County Sheriff's Department has claimed that that's a crop duster and that people were just getting that wrong. Well, you know, it's kind of winter now. There's no reason for a crop duster, for one thing, and there are no crops within miles.
Well, I was going to get to that, and I know, and I was going to bring it up, but you did it for me, and I want to bring DB into this as well. There is a conspiracy going on right now that there was perhaps some geoengineering or weather engineering that went on to make conditions worse there. Have either of you heard some of these outlandish conspiracy theories?
I'll defer to her. Yeah, I could only assume they could do it.
I've heard it, and I don't necessarily buy that. I mean, like, weather modification is a thing. Our government does, ostensibly under the guise of trying to prevent global warming. You know, it is a thing that happens. We know this. It's in documents. It's been proven. As far as targeting the camps, I think that's a bit much.
Yeah,
but
that's fine.
But people there have heard the planes. People have stayed in the camps for months have heard planes at night. Over the camps, and not just the typical monitoring, like surveillance planes and helicopters and such. So, you know, that's all real out there, and it has yet to be proven. So, I don't want to delve too deep into it. But it, you know, everybody is sick there. A lot of people were sick after the 20th when they were, you know, there. I heard reports that there were 100 people that went into hypothermia after being sprayed with water.
Oh,
so
I
you
bet.
Have that. The chemical
there was
agents,
a woman
like tear
who...
gas and stuff.
There was a woman whose bone was exposed. She got hit so
yes.
hard by that water
there,
cannon.
There is also a Native woman who's Vanessa Nathan, Susie, who has permanently lost sight in her eye because
oh,
she was
God.
Hit with a tear gas canister in the face. It's
that
insane
is,
what's going on.
That is.
But this is. Sorry.
No.
There's a reason everybody's sick, for sure. It's
yeah,
just
no,
there
no,
might
no. I
be
mean,
like
wasn't...
a deeper aspect to it.
I wasn't, you know, presuming. I wasn't presuming that there was a conspiracy. The conspiracy is right in front of us, and you've described a conspiracy, and that is that this is about corporate profit over people, and that much is clear to us right now.
Claire,
I guess...
were you in Bismarck, and if so, did you see any? Men that were coming in by the busload in fatigue gear with basically no insignia at all. I mean, people are saying these were unmarked National Guard getting ready. And now that the vets were pulling out, they were going to go in and just basically level the camp. Had you heard anything or seen anything about that?
I have. I did not go to Bismarck because I was warned that would be like a really terrible idea. I do know that before the 5th, and in preparation for the mainstream media arrival at the camp, like en masse, the police pulled back from the bridge. If you're looking from the camp toward the bridge on Highway 1806, there's a number of cement barriers that have been placed in the road, not directly blocking it, but kind of in line with it. They've made it difficult to remove these barriers. It's kind of insane. Past that is normally a line of militarized police constantly monitoring people coming up to the bridge and such. When mainstream media arrived, all of those police forces essentially retreated back up the hill beyond the bridge and around a corner where they're hidden from sight. I've seen pictures where there are literal army barracks now encamped with police, and I've heard the figure is somewhere around 1,400 National Guard troops and police officers camped right up there beyond the sight of the public. There was talk for a long time that there might be force used to evacuate everyone from camp. That's rather doubtful, but we're talking about the dwindling moments of hope for these people to try to prevent this pipeline from going through. And if anything were to take place, there's a veritable army waiting to meet them with force. And the police have been cleared. They requested and have been cleared to use live ammunition against people who act aggressively. There are also snipers positioned on the hills watching the camp, watching people who come and go from the camp. There's a no-fly zone in effect. The water protectors are not permitted to fly drones to check on the progress of the drill pad or to check on, you know, anything in the area, even to take photos of their own camp. They're not permitted to do so. Yet the police fly, and actually DAPL fly helicopters constantly surveilling the area. There are planes that surveil the area. This has not been seen before in our country. I would like to imagine this will never be seen again. But to me, being there and seeing what I saw, this is a very terrifying precedent for where we're headed and for why we're headed there. The reason the veterans came out to defend the water protectors was because they said that they swore an oath to defend the Constitution and defend people's human rights and free speech. And they're absolutely right. Like, the police they're in dereliction of duty right now. They are not protecting public safety by any means. They're not protecting anybody except for the pipeline interests. So this is really unprecedented. It's really lopsided, and the coverage by mainstream media has been completely unfair and inaccurate. And I hope that people will take the time to investigate and look at the videos that have been taken on scene and understand exactly what's going on.
Yeah, you really described the situation pretty. It's pretty scary to think that the media, the military, and the local police are all conniving together to protect corporate interest. I mean, that is literally the definition of corporatocracy. And the only thing I can see fighting back against it is this unified movement of different movements connecting together and forming a force so powerful that the state literally has to listen, or they will lose corporate profits, votes, and anything else that they would consider necessary to keep their sandcastle from getting washed away. And, you know, I mentioned before that I think all these different groups have a responsibility now to join together. I'm talking about, you know, Occupy Wall Street, which was at its core, you know, pro-people, anti-corporate, Black Lives Matter, which is very much in solidarity with this movement. And I would like to think that, I mean, we're starting to see some of the more leftist politicians getting on board. But, you know, I read a blog that was just excoriating Denis Kucinich for even, you know, attempting to lend solidarity, because at the end of the day, he'll send out a press release, but he won't actually do anything. And the same is with Bernie Sanders, unfortunately.
There's only been one politician who actually did anything of substance, and even that was really thin, and that was Cory Booker, who's himself fraught. But he actually requested from the Department of Justice to have monitors sent to the scene and to have an investigation into civil rights abuses, which needs to be done, absolutely. But Attorney General Loretta Lynch's response, essentially, to his letter was, we're watching. I mean, it was... If you want to see clearly where the power lies in this country, look at the code of access pipeline. Look at this. Look at this. Look at what's happening. Look at what's being defended versus what is not being defended. All of the insidious and horrible details, you know, with the infighting and everything else aside, look at where the government's loyalty lies and what they are doing to protect the rights of civilians. When you examine that on the surface, even alone, you can see what's going on. So,
I've all of this has been going through my head, and you just perfectly described it. And I really do feel like Standing Rock right now is the nexus of so many different social movements right now, and it's scary. Well, I mean, I'm glad you're safe. You're, you know, not feeling great, but you're psychologically, do you think you're, you know, kind of recovering from the mind F that was?
Yeah, that's gonna take some time. There was some interesting things going on there.
Right. I know you can't talk about
I'm very, people have asked me repeatedly, so I should probably say I'm extremely glad that I went there. Right. I kind of went there on a whim. I've been, like I said, I've been covering it for months, and I wanted to see what was actually going on. And there was kind of a godsmack of truth that was difficult to handle, but I'm very glad that I went, and I met some amazing people who are doing very serious work to try to make sure this does not play out repeatedly in the future. It's questionable whether that will be effective or not. They have some really good ideas, and I hope that this can be done. But yes, I'm very glad that I went. And I wish that people would go there very prepared for the winter. I wish that people would go there and reinforce the troops, so to speak.
Right. Yeah. It will happen. I mean, if once Trump gets in, if he gets in, that he, if he tries to push this through, the people will remobilize, and they're not gonna stop. They're not gonna give up. And if they force it through, you know, look at what happens when the establishment tries to force things these days. It doesn't go wonderfully for them.
Not really. Not really. It doesn't go according to plan necessarily.
Yeah, it's they did not, and they clearly did not want a lot of media attention on this, and they're doing their best to keep it that way. And of course, this is overlapping with this whole fake news bullshit, and there's a certain irony here that is unbelievable, that you have, as DB called it, mortician erected Hillary Clinton resurfacing to do nothing. All of these social movements going on, all of these incredible things happening, and all she has to say for herself is fake news. And there is kind of an incredible irony that the mainstream media is trying to distract us with this idea of fake news, while at the same time they are engaging in their dereliction of duty and sin by omission, in which they're not reporting on the biggest story of our time, which is right now. This is one of them. I mean,
it's omission, and it's like horrendous mischaracterization.
Right.
I mean,
What
They
you're
have
seeing on
done.
display is who truly runs things. I mean,
Exactly. That's exactly it.
Who runs things is DAPL, and how they do it is Pizzagate. And when you tie the two together, you see why we're such a sick, sick culture and society.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's connected too. I mean, we are a sick society, and we have sociopaths and, well, let's be honest, psychopaths running the show here, and they're highly organized. They're highly rational. I mean,
we're talking about people who have convinced a large swath of the populace to find people who want clean drinking water in the wrong.
Right.
That yeah. If there's anything more characteristic of a sick society, that must be it.
They've convinced guys. Oh, sorry, Claire, but they've convinced guys that should be really putting up windmills to fight for an oil line that will pay
that
them
wanted.
Maybe 5 years, maybe 10 years, instead of windmills that will pay them forever as they maintain them.
This really is. I mean, people have grown tired of the conversation on this particular topic, but really, there is nothing more pertinent to pretty much everything else.
No.
When it comes to the trampling of human rights and property rights, and I mean, like, the battle is playing out in the other states. There are three other states where this is going on. Iowa has used eminent domain to claim property to allow this pipeline to go through. I mean, this is a huge issue. The most troubling aspect is it's going to repeat, you know, hundreds of times if we don't actually step up to the plate and stop it now.
Right. Well, and we're going to have to keep fighting. It's not going to go away. This is, you know, that's what people keep thinking is that oh, we're going to win this battle and then the war is going to be won. No, this is an endless war. This is it's been going on for a long time. This is just the newest incarnation of it. And it's going to keep going on for a while. And if anything, these purveyors of so-called fake news, which basically is, you know, according to the establishment, alternative media, which is, as you've eloquently stated and as we've all agreed upon, this war on fake news is a war on A, transparency, B, alternative media, and C, well, truth. That's what this war on fake news really is. And, you know, there, you know, we it my point was that this is an ongoing war, and if we lose this one, and we could very well, because, you know, I'll be honest, when they made that announcement that they were going to pull back, I was like, okay, the message received. They realize that this is bringing too much negative attention, and they're going to pull back and wait. Same as with TPP, they're going to wait until, you know, put it on the back burner for a little bit, let people forget about it, keep the boil running, keep the soup on the back burner, and then when people forget about it, you bring it up and you get the boil going back, and you serve the soup to keep the metaphor going. And I think it's going to happen with TPP, regardless of Trump being against it, and I think it will happen with this once he gets in office. I can't see the investment they've made here. The moral victory that would result from us winning this, and by us I mean us, the people who realize that this is a global universal injustice, I'm not sure they're willing to accept that loss, but they may accept future losses. I don't know where the next one's going to be.
The only way to affect a loss, a permanent loss, the only way to make this movement, like, absolutely viable in the future and not to have our rights completely trodden, is to make sure that the export of foreign crude, or the export of crude to foreign lands, is repealed. We have to make sure that ban goes back into effect. Otherwise, we can see this repeated 1,000 times in the future.
Oh boy, this is how sobering. Here I was about to thinking about going and getting a beer I need the beer now. I need beer now. That's what I'm going from this one.
We need to make sure this movement keeps going, and we need to make sure that the misinformation is not spread. It's really important that people understand all the specifications of this project above anything else.
So do you have a project in mind of kind of unifying your previous writings with your personal experience there that we have to look forward to?
Yeah, I'm considering it finally, actually making kind of an uncensored site for my stuff, because obviously I'm very opinionated and can't really do that for anybody else, so.
Well, I think people would be very happy. Well, I mean, certain people would be very happy about it. I would be. I don't think Hillary Clinton would be, but I mean, you guys aren't really friends anymore, right? You
not,
and
not
Hillary.
Not really. No, yeah. That's kind of fallen out. Yeah.
DB, you're not friends with Hillary anymore, right? You guys kind of burned that bridge.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I just it was too much stuff, too much shit talking by me, I guess.
Oh boy. Well, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing. I mean, you really just described, I mean, 2 weeks of frustration for me has just gone away because of the way you've just described that, because I've been just unable to put it into words, and you did so. So I really appreciate that. And I guess that the last thing here, we've got like a minute left, is just to get our take on where we think this movement can go. I mean, do we think, is it transferable? Can we unite these movements? I mean, you've answered yes. DB, do you think we can keep this train running? Do you think victory is ultimately within our purview?
I think just real easily people can move their money out of a big bank, put it into a credit union, and get an electric car as soon as you can by doing those two things. Even if you're really lazy, you just shattered the whole paradigm. So,
right. Well, there's our calling bell. So thank you for joining us. Be good to each other. Let's try and keep sane, and have a good weekend, everyone. Be good to each other. I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is JJ.